Okay, with the writer and producer of Down in Flames, the true story of Tony Volcano Vassini, is the short film. It's 29 minutes long. It's a little bit misleading because we played at the documentary festival, but it's not a true documentary, despite some of the audience members thinking it was a documentary, I guess, right?
Yes, it's so well done that we had people at not just the feedback of festival, but at other festivals come up to us and go, "Oh, it's so sad. What happened to that man?" And it's like you're talking to that man because I played Tony.
Oh,
So,
gotcha. Oh, you're also, oh, gotcha. Because you
course, you
don't,
couldn't tell now because I'm in disguise now.
you don't cast yourself. Like you're not on the cast list. I see
That's
on
correct.
Google.
If you go to IMDb, they reveal the truth, but the actuality is because I've been a professional fire eater for 50 years.
Oh, okay.
So I was the logical person to play Tony.
So you should, before we press record, show me the award. We send you the cinema
Yes.
trophy, send you the award. You like it?
Oh, I love this. This is a beautiful, beautiful award. It's very classy, very nice, and it looks very good on a shelf down in my living room. And
Oh,
something I
great.
point to. Plus the design you guys came up with the multicolors coming out of the projector, just really beautiful. Very, very nice.
Oh, it's so good to hear. I appreciate that. That's a testimonial. I didn't pay you. I didn't do anything. I
No,
just
you didn't.
okay. Okay. So okay. I want to go way back. How does
Sure.
one become a fire eater? How does one say, you know what, they wake up one day and they're in grade school and they're like, you know what, I'm gonna be a fire eater. That's what I'm gonna do for a living. How does that even happen?
Well, I've been a professional magician for as long as I've been a fire eater, and I was learning magic at the time. I was studying and improving what I did as a magician, and then this one guy, I saw him eating fire, and I went, "Wow, I can never do that." And he's like, "Sure you can. I'll teach you." And I went, "Oh, okay." So he taught me how to eat fire, how to manipulate it, and I do a lot less of it than I used to. I mean, I used to do like in the movie, I do blowouts and shooting fireballs out of your mouth and things. I've cut way back on that due to health reasons. I mean, you are consuming lighter fluid when you do it.
Yes.
So it's not exactly the healthiest thing, but I still do fire eating with juggling torches. And juggling torches is a very big wick. It's like this big, and there's a reason I can do it. I have a big mouth. So that's one of the things I still do is fire eating and fire juggling. And the reason I got interested and added it to my repertoire of things that I do is that there's nothing more exciting than seeing someone eat fire.
There's yeah well yeah I get well but it, like how long does like say tomorrow I'm gonna be a fire eater. So how does it like how long would it be for the training to be a fire eater, and where would you go to do it anyway? And also
Well, there are circus schools that do teach this.
okay.
I was lucky that a friend did and walked me through the process, and then I practiced every day for about a month. And the trick is you start with very small torches, and you learn the breath control and how to exhale, and that's very, very important. He also walked me through the things you never do. The biggest thing with fire eating that you never do is when you have the torch near you, you don't inhale. So that's because you can burn your lungs and that can kill you. So I was very lucky that he walked me through the process and then I rehearsed every day until I became comfortable with it. And then over the years, I've built up to bigger
Sure.
and bigger tricks.
Yeah, and I'm sure the body is like used to you doing that as
Yeah.
well, right? So
Yes, and beginning to go, what? Why are you still doing this to me? Why, what is it? What's wrong with you?
or maybe it's
But
like, yay, you're doing this to me. Yay. I don't know. Who knows, right? So.
sometimes it depends on the day. I had a very bad, one of the reasons I cut way back on fire eating is I did a wedding in which I made a mistake
Oh.
and I set my face on fire. That was about 2 years ago. And I know everything I did wrong in retrospect.
Yeah.
But at the time it was a big deal and I had scabs all over my face. I mean, I had to not work for months after that. But
Well, I think the bride and groom will always remember that, right? I guess.
yeah, well, of course they were real worried about me, and I'm like, I'm fine. No, I'm fine, because performer, oh, I'm fine. But so I don't do the blowouts anymore, because it especially with the beard, because if you do it wrong,
I was
your
gonna say,
beard
yeah.
goes on fire. Yes. So I've cut, but I still juggle, and I still do the eating, and I still entertain people. So it's wonderful.
So okay, so what? I'm just to go back to that story. Did someone help you when that happened? One of the audience members help you when you
No,
broke
what I
your
had to
foot?
help myself, as always. The problem is, you see, whenever a fire eater does a blowout, he carries a towel on his shirt. In
Okay.
fact, if you see the film, Tony has always got this towel on his shirt. Why has he got that? Well, that's because if you do something wrong and you start to burn, you take the towel and hit it in your face. Right before I did the blowout, it dropped off my shoulder the moment before the blowout. So the blowout went wrong, my face started on fire, and I didn't have my towel. And I had to like reach on the floor and grab it, and then I got it out. But you're really on your own when that happens. There's nothing anybody else can do, because everybody is in shock. They have no idea what to do.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah. Like it's okay. All right. So let's talk about
More
it.
information than you may have
No.
wanted.
It's fascinating. Listen, it's like how many times do you talk to a fire eater in your lifetime? Probably
Yeah,
one, right?
that's
You're the
true.
only one. So basically, it's a fascinating, like, this the whole mat, like, illusion or magician and carny kind of lifestyle is a
Yes.
fascinating world. It's like that you probably have a million stories to tell.
It's been a fun ride. I still enjoy what I do.
So let's talk about the movie itself. So
Yeah.
basically, where did this movie? Okay, first of all, have you made a movie previously before this
Yes,
one?
I made a movie with the same director. I've actually been a working actor for as long as I've been a magician and everything else. And I've gotten chances to, I mean, I was a stand-in for Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller on their film, Penn and Teller Get Killed. And I've done minor roles. But then my director, William J. Stribling, who co-wrote the script for Down in Flames and directed it, he did a project called Beyond Belief, in which he needed a magician. And I it was one of those things. I saw a casting notice. They wanted a magician. I auditioned and I got the role. And we went on to do that movie. And that movie has won many, many awards. And in fact, I won a couple of film festival best actor awards, which you can't take to the bank, but it's a nice thing to get.
Sure, of course.
And after we did Beyond Belief, I said, I'd like to do another film. And he's like, well, what do you got in mind? And I had nothing in mind. But at one of the film festivals we went to, there was a documentary called Bending Steel. And it was about this guy who wanted to learn to be an old-fashioned strongman, where he would do a show of bending nails and bending pieces of metal and handing them to the audience and things. And it was about his struggle to learn that.
Okay.
And I went home going, thinking to myself, yeah, that would be a good format. That would be a really good format, but what would it be? And then it was like a fire eating would, but you'd have to do something crazy, like eat fire while skydiving. And the next morning, I was in the shower, and the opening lines of the movie came to me in the shower. The water's pouring on my head, and I say the opening lines, which are, the fire game ain't easy. You know what I mean? And the whole idea. And then that day, we were still at the film festival, so I went to William Stribling, and I said, I got this idea for a film. And he said, and this was like June. And he said, I've got 2 weeks in August. That's free.
Okay.
So we together, with him in California and me in New Jersey, we co-wrote the script. We got everything planned out, and we shot the film just a few months after that experience. We had the whole thing laid out, and the cast and everything, and we put it together in just a few months.
Oh
So,
wow. And
yeah.
he's like, first of all, like you like we talked about in the beginning, where like you're trying to make it as real as possible. It's almost a contradiction where You're making it as weird as like kind of normal as possible that people are convinced that this is actually a real guy, while making us laugh too, right? We're like,
Yeah.
it's that tone where like you got to keep making us laugh, but it's got to be realistic as possible, I guess, right?
Yes. And that's what makes it work. And we were very lucky that that we were able to cast Colin Smith and Tyler Hollinger as the two instructors for skydiving, because they are brilliant. Almost every scene with them in it is improvised. They were just brilliant improvisational guys, and they came up with the trick was not cracking up while filming, because that was a real test, because they would say stuff. And there's one scene, if you look at the film, there's one scene where I almost lose it, but I don't, because it just became so silly at sometimes. But they were just brilliant at it, and they just went with each other and worked off of each other so brilliantly that we ended up using more of the improv footage than we originally planned in the script.
So you're in this kind of the setting is kind of like this, like New York area, New York, like New Jersey, Staten Island, Long Island.
Well,
And it's like
we
the blue.
recreated New York and Staten Island using New Jersey. That's kind
Yeah.
of
Well, it's like that blue
what we
collar kind of world
did.
that with that with the big city of like, it's like that kind of, we've seen this before, but we understand this kind of world. And like, so we're full-fledged into this kind of like tri-state area, kind of blue collar lifestyle. This guy just happens to be, like a, crazy Italian,
Yeah.
So we get it. So basically, okay, so let me t talk about you wrote the script, and then obviously you talk about improv. So that's what I was asking. Was it like a kind of a blueprint of the script? Like you knew the plot points and then you kind of just
No,
improv.
most of the Tony monologues and most of the interviews of Tony's friends was scripted, and they all followed the script. It was mostly the Tony training to do the skydiving that was improvised. And then William Stribling watched a bunch of documentaries when it came time to cut, when it came time to edit the film. He watched a lot of documentaries and really got down the style, the stylistic nuances of a documentary that just made the whole thing really, really work. And we had to give, yeah, and of course, we had to give up some scenes that we'd scripted that we loved. I mean, we had some scenes with some other people that we had to cut simply because of time.
Well, that was my one other point I wanted to make is where it's 29 minutes long and it just flies. Like obviously I see a lot of films, right? A lot of
Yeah.
short films. It just flies by. Like it doesn't feel like 29 minutes, which is I feel is a great compliment. And I think everybody who watches it feels the same way. Were you ever enticed to like just push it a little bit and make it a feature film?
We had enough footage to do that, but we really wanted to keep it in the short film category. And of course, the short film category really tops out at 30 minutes. You really have to. Almost all the film festivals, you really, if you're going to be a short film, it's got to be less than 30 minutes. So we really kept it to that.
Arguably 30 minutes is even long, right? Because it's like a
Yeah, for
programmer can program
there.
three or four films or five films in that block, right? So your film, I
Correct.
always say that people who make films this long, it's got to be five times better than a 10-minute short film because the programmer can block, like you'd rather accept three films or five films than your film, right? So that
Yes.
your film's got to be that great to program it. So,
And with the film we did before, Beyond Belief, that was only like 15 minutes long. That was
yeah.
a standard short film. So we and again, with the script, we were about 25 minutes, but then everything got redone. And then, of course, our wonderful composer Dylan Glathorne came up with the song for Tony. And we had to record it for the credits, because it was just a great song, and we thought that that was the perfect ending for the film.
So you talked about the skydiver guys who kind of improv. They don't come into the film, but halfway into the film, they're kind of setting up your ending. But tell me about the ex-wife actor. Where did you find her?
Sarah Blaze, we she was she always plays my wife or my ex-wife in the films we did. She was my wife in Beyond Belief.
Okay.
And the story of Beyond Belief was it's a magician who's down on his luck, his rabbits keep dying, and you find out later that his wife has been poisoning his rabbits, so he'll quit and get a real job. So
That's dark. Yeah.
yes, it is rather. But she is just a brilliant, brilliant actress. And my favorite scene of her in Down in Flames is she has the urn for Tony next to her and she's smoking. And she says, you know, it's really sad. And she just flips the ash into the urn with so subtly. That was an idea I came up with. And I said to William, I said, can we try this? And he's like, ah, I think that's too much. But she made it work so beautifully that it was the perfect with just the nuance it needed. And I'm a very big fan of hers. She's just a great, great entertainer.
Because these are not like people, like, let's be honest here. These are not easy roles to play, right? Like,
No.
they seem easy, like, oh, she's just going to go over the top and she's going to be this, like, Staten Island, kind of cliche. But there's nuance to her role. But for someone who sees a lot of mockumentaries, 90% of them don't work, right? Because
Right.
it's just too unrealistic. That their tones, everybody's making a different film, nobody's on the same page. And but she like finds that heart, if that makes sense, in her kind of performance, which makes it work because it's like so difficult to do, right? Because she's really all her scenes, she's sitting smoking a cigarette, talking to the camera, right?
Correct. A couple scenes. She has a couple scenes in the dance studio, but
Yeah.
other than that, it's mostly that
And then
it's
you got
mostly
some stills, of course, for context,
right.
right? But yeah, and it's just remarkable that someone can do that. It's just like, but kudos to your director because he's the one who's keeping the tone intact, right? And you can
Correct.
tell that you said he researched the documentaries. He really, in editing, he's got to find that kind of like the proper takes, I guess, right? For each scene.
Correct. Yeah, and plus we didn't know if we would be able to get the shots for the skydiving that would work for the effect. And we just had a great team at Sussex Airport who they do these skydiving with, you know, people go with a with an experienced jumper and they're wrapped in and the team we got, and the guy who played Tony's stunt double, because there's no way I'm jumping out of a plane unless the plane is crashing. But he was able to follow the instructions and pull it off perfectly. So, and then once we added CGI to do the actual fire eating while skydiving. But if he hadn't done the moves right, it never would have worked. And he did all of them perfectly. We were just so lucky that, in fact, when we were at the airport and he's looking at it before we leave, he's looking at the footage that we took. Thank goodness for digital. He's going, this is better than anything I could have hoped for. And interestingly, also, the skydiving sequence is the only thing that came in under budget.
Oh wow, okay. Well, I guess you overdid it in like in a sense budget-wise because you didn't know what you're you didn't know no you don't know what you don't know, I guess, right? So
Correct.
yeah.
So
So okay,
they're
so tell
very
me
good to
about
us.
your performance because you're obviously in makeup and you're you're doing this podcast, people watching it on YouTube. You have gray hair. Your
Yes.
character does not. Your character is very slick Italian, kind of.
Yes. I
So,
also had to wear brown contact lenses because I have blue eyes.
oh wow, okay. So you went
So
all the way then.
I went all the way. Brown contact lenses. I grew the pencil mustache and colored it in because it was as white as it is now.
Yeah.
My hair's been white since I was in my 50s, and so I had the pencil mustache that I colored in, and I would color my eyebrows, and I wore the toupee. I wore this whole wig for Tony, and it was. It's not the cheapest wig you could get, but it's not the most expensive wig you could get. So that was the point. The hairpiece looked like it wasn't cheap, but you could tell it was a hairpiece. So I really and I had two of those. So there was one. We fortunately our makeup and costumer was able to keep one constantly nice. So if I had to switch out, I could. In case the hair got crazy.
So tell me about who were you channeling for this role? Like, 'cause you're fantastic, and basically it's like
Oh,
very
thank you.
entertaining.
Well, I'm also a novelist. I write, in fact, today, as of today, my 21st book came online, is published.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's a funny thing about characters, and I find this with novel writing, which is more of my experience than screenplays. But in novel writing, the character comes to you. You don't necessarily come to it. And Tony, I try to imbue him with the emotions that I felt and that I had for it, but the character kind of came to me fully blown. As I said in the shower, when the first line came to me, I suddenly knew Tony's look. I knew how he sounded. I knew what I needed to do to create the character. It all came to me in a flash. So I'd love to say, oh, I went back to my basics and I studied all my acting books and I did. No, the character came to me, and then it was my job to flesh it out as realistically as possible.
Oh, okay. So, and then, like it's like a you're like a seasoned actor in this performance. Like you don't, like if you if I if you didn't tell me that was you, I still wouldn't be convinced, right? So,
Oh, and I
but yeah, it's a
did it
well, you're
right.
carrying the film, right? Like you're carrying the film. Like we have to care at the end. Like we
Yes.
have to, yeah.
You have to care about Tony. If you don't care about him, because and also there's a little bit of Tony in almost everyone. I could, it's that old on the waterfront Marlon Brando's line, I could have been somebody, And you can identify with that with Tony, is that here's this guy who always wanted just a little recognition, and he wanted to do something that would really make people aware of him. And in this age of everybody wants to be an influencer, a lot of people can identify with that. And creating, we all have those feelings, so they were easy to bring up and to imbue it into the character.
So I have a daughter, and she's reading the Guinness Book of World Records. She's 7, and she's reading, and she's like fascinated by
Oh,
these
yeah.
characters, right? Like it's like it fascinates her, like these people who do these crazy things, right? And you're right. It's almost like we're kind of catching. It's like, because that's what, when I was growing up, it was like the Guinness Book of World Records. And I remember, like, if you remember Soap, the TV show, where like Bert wanted to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. I don't. This is I'm going way back, right?
I'm old enough to remember that.
Yeah,
A lot of
I go.
people
It's
aren't.
so funny, right? It's like I'm going way back, right? And basically, people are like, "What?" And anyways, basically, but it's almost like you're 100% right. It's like we. This generation identifies with this character because it's like, you're right. It's the influencer. We all want to be famous. We all like, not
Yeah.
all, but you know what I mean? There's that general assessment that we want to make a mark, I guess, right? A certain, like
Yeah.
we, yeah,
Yeah.
a legacy.
I think it's a human desire is you want to do something where, you feel people will respect you. And it's interesting you mentioned the Guinness Book of World Records, because David Abramov, who is the great Throwdini, who appeared in the film, is now in charge of checking the records for the Guinness Book of World Records. And he sent me a very delightful thing. I have to step off camera, but I'm going to get it for you
Okay.
real quick.
He's stepping off camera and he's going to come back.
And I'm back. Wasn't that far.
Yeah.
He sent this certificate from official world record certificate to Tony Volcano Valency, highest flame ever blown. So he made this up. He had Guinness make this up. It's not in the books. It's not in the books.
Well,
But he made this up for the We Care for World Records. And Dr. David Abramovich is the great Throwdini, and he was in the movie, and he sent this to me, and I've had it. It's in glass, and I have it up on the wall, just as a thrilled that he said it. It was such a surprise because
that's
I didn't expect
amazing.
it at all.
What are the odds, right? Like,
Yes.
that's yeah, because yeah, because it, for many reasons, that's not true. One, there's no such thing as Tony. Two, that you CGI'd it, and three, it wasn't even you. You used a body double, so
Right.
it's flawed on many
So.
different. That's a flawed document on many different levels, right?
Yes, but it's very nice that he sent it, and very nice that they went along with sending it. But no, it's not going to appear in any, so don't worry, folks. Don't worry, it's not there. We know it was fake.
No, it's a cool like little book, right? Because it's like, yeah, it's like I remember when I was a kid, I wanted to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. I think my dream has been forgotten, but yeah, that's so great. So you mentioned the other the magicians in the film. So you have two of them, and the one of the guy who basically I don't know how
Yes,
did he
Todd Robbins, who is a
I'm
world record holder. He's eaten over 5,000 light bulbs in his career.
Okay, so how does he do the sword? And he takes it down his throat?
Yes, he really does. It's not a trick. The sword swallowing is an actual skill that one can develop. It is not a skill I've learned because while learning it, you have to overcome the gag reflex, which means you throw up a lot before you learn to do it.
Well, you
And
don't
it's
want to throw up. You don't want to gag when the sword's in your throat, though, right?
that
Like
yeah,
that's.
you don't start with a sword. It's like fire eating. You don't start with a big torch. You start with a small little teeny torch.
It's like
So
somebody in our lifetime had to start these crazy activities, right? Like once somebody
it's been
woke
handed
up,
down for hundreds of years.
that's what I'm saying. Someone
Handed
woke up
down.
in the 14th, 15th century and said, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna figure out how to do this, right? It's like
Yes, and he
what?
was probably the most famous man of his time period because he was the only one who did
Yeah. It's crazy. It's really crazy. It's but
it.
it's fascinating at the same time, right? So, and then you got
Yes.
the other gentleman with the cigarettes, right?
Yes, Richie Magic. Richie has consumed a certain amount of cigarettes. Unfortunately, since the film was made, he did pass away.
Oh.
So. We're very sad we lost Richie. He was, and the amazing thing about Richie is he was a former cop, and then he became a magician, and he did these world record things, and he did a whole thing about teaching kids about not smoking anytime he would do a show, he was one of the best when we started filming him. He was fantastic on camera. He just came across so sincere and good. We were all amazed that he was such a good actor.
Yeah, well, these are your friends. I guess you've known these guys for a long time,
Oh
right?
yeah.
Asking to be here in your film.
Yes.
Yeah. They really add
Yes.
context to they really add nice kind of a feeling to the film, right? Where it's
And
like,
they all really hold world records. So that's what made it even
yeah,
a better thing.
this is legit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you feel about the people? Okay, so tell me, okay, what did you think about the audience? We send the audience to you in the audience feedback video. What did you think about that video that we sent you?
It was very nice. I'm some people, as I said, some people got it that it was
Yeah.
just a comedy. And one of the guys said, every time I turned around, I was laughing. And some people were like, oh, I thought it was a very good film. It's so sad what happened to that man. And
Yeah.
it's like, oh no. I literally at a film event had a person going, oh, it's terrible that he died. How can you be laughing about it? And it's like, well, he didn't really. But the feedback is great. I think that that's a great thing that you guys do. It's just seeing a feedback like that. It's not some usually you have to go to a film festival and be in the room to get any feedback.
Yeah.
In this case, you have this wonderful video that you guys send out, which has all this feedback on it, and you get to hear what people think, and it's just wonderful. I think it's a wonderful thing. I know it's not a quote unquote gimmick. It's what you chose to do, but it's great. It really is a wonderful thing for the filmmakers.
Because the editor Allison was like, should we add this video? Like some of the audience members didn't get it, right? Or they didn't get they weren't in on the ruse, I guess, right?
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, I've gotten that before.
Yeah, no, that's
So,
what I mean. So yeah, I'm like, yeah, sure, send it to him because it's like that's what it's about, right? Like that's like, so anyways, they're not dumb people who didn't think that they just like, saw the
no,
film.
it's just the
You know?
film has done so well that people aren't sure.
Yeah.
And
It's
that's what we were after. That was the whole plan.
you really nailed it. So yeah, great, fantastic job. So what are you making another film? Like what's next for you?
Well, my director, William Stripling, is constantly making film. He's doing a web series called Headless,
Okay.
which is all about the Sleepy Hollow and the legends there, but done as a comedy. And it's very clever. I really recommend people, if you get a chance, go on YouTube and see Headless, because it's just very, very funny. And William is just great at making films with the person with his tongue in cheek very tightly, so that you're seeing it and identifying with people, and you're not sure whether it's real or not. He's just really, really excellent at that, and surprising you. And right now I've been focused on my novels, because it's actually become a very nice source of income. I'm one of those self-published authors who actually makes more in royalties than I spend in ads, which is a good thing. And so I'm really focused on that. But if the opportunity comes along, and if the stars align, I would certainly love to make another movie.
So okay, so you brought so is it Borden 3 that's out right now? The third installment of Borden?
Borden.
Sorry, you're I'm sorry, I'm just on your website for your novels.
Oh, my novels. Yeah, I just got the I can't show you it because it's not in print yet.
Yeah.
It is the 21st novel is the 12th book in the Dr. Wise series.
Okay.
So, and
Dr.
in that
Wise
case,
series.
yes, and in that case, to find those books on Amazon, you have to look up the ARJAY Lewin.
Oh, gotcha. See, that's my bad. There's another. Yeah.
Because let's see, in the first book,
Oh, now I got it. Now I got
the
it.
first book in the series is free for the next 5 days. This
Okay.
podcast might not come out before that, but in any case, it's 99 cents most of the time, and it's the first book in the series. And I also have award-winning no horror novels. I've now, at this point, won a total of 51 book awards for
Well,
my books.
congratulations. So what like so you're making a living as a
Novelist.
self-published author. Like that, I don't think I've ever heard that sentence out loud before. So
Yes, you can. And in fact, what my plans are for the next few months is to get an agent and see about a traditional publisher, because if I want my books to end up where I want them to end up, I think I'm going to have to go the more traditional route.
of course.
That's nothing against what I'm doing, but to have books in every bookstore and things. And I think I'm ready for that jump, because I've spent the last few years just really improving my craft and making books that are really, really readable and people enjoy. So, and there's kind of an art to that as well.
There's another, well, another revenue stream is the audiobook, right? So
Yes. And I do some of the audiobook work myself, and I also hire people to do the audiobooks, which you can do with Audible. In fact, the my latest horror novel, Digger, I hired a man named Daryl Mayfield to read the main character, because the main character is an African American reporter, and I wanted to hire an African American actor,
Yeah.
obviously. He did such a brilliant job that when my wife and I were listening to each chapter, we just kept being amazed. It's like, wow, I didn't know the book was this good. It's because he just brought it to life so well that it just brought it to an entirely new level. So I've been very lucky. I've had narrators who are just really, really excellent, and it makes me want to up my game as a narrator for because I'm narrating the Dr. Wise series because it's a very personal series to me.
Well, that's the new world, right? Like it's like they I think Malcolm Gladwell was on a podcast and I think like a month ago, and he was saying that more people are listening to his books than reading his books now.
Yes. And that's true for me because I still work as a professional magician and I'm constantly driving to things and I always have an audiobook.
Yeah, well, I'm working in
Always
front of the
listening.
computer all the time, and I'm always listening to it. Yeah, audiobook too, right? So
Yes, and it's a great way to read a book because, you know, very important thing for anybody who writes, whether you write screenplays or novels, constantly be listening or reading books and screenplays constantly. It's a good thing to do. In
So, am
fact,
I allowed to say, as a novelist, I say I say I can I say I read a book a week, but I
okay.
li actually listen to a book a week. Am I allowed to say I read a book a week?
Yes,
Yeah. Okay.
because you actually get nuances in an audiobook that you won't get reading the page. There
Okay.
are little things that you
People
get.
say the opposite. My generation, they say the opposite, like what you just said, right? They say you're missing the nuance by not reading. So.
But you know, I love listening to a Dean Koontz novel because when you listen to Dean Koontz, the language is just amazing. And to hear someone read that out loud, you go, oh, wow, that's a good sentence.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of biographies, and it's getting through the kind of like the dryness. Sometimes it's good to listen to it,
Oh,
so as
yeah.
you're reading it. So, okay, so you're on your way. So, this one last question: how do you find that narrator? You mentioned that one narrator who did your book. Where did you find him to do it?
I found him on Audible.
Oh, you
They
found him on Audible.
have an entire you can put in what you look for and they'll recommend narrators.
Oh, that okay.
And
So
then
we've all who have also done other
you
things, I
have them
guess.
audition by reading your copy and then you pick the best voice or the
Okay.
voice you think fits the best. And Daryl just, I mean, each guy we got I kept listening, going, oh, that guy's really good. Oh, man, that guy's really. And then Daryl Mayfield did his, and I went, oh, there's nothing to question. He's the one to do it. And he
Gotcha.
did a brilliant job on the novel. And now, in fact, I have him working on one of my other novels, The Vampires of Greenwich Village, which is a fantasy novel. And he's doing the vocals for that. And just again, he's knocking it out of the park. It's beautiful.
Well, I took too much of your time. This is a great film. It's one of the best
Oh,
of the year, in my opinion. And like I said, 29 minutes, it's just flies by, which is like it's amazing. So I
and you
appreciate your
can,
time.
by the way, you can get the film on Amazon. It is available on Amazon.
Oh,
If
great.
you have Prime, you can go there, Down in Flames. And again, thank you for selecting us as the best short film. I'm truly, truly honored.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much for your time, and let's talk again, either when you make your next film or whenever you want to promote here something, we're always here.
All righty. Thank you so much.
Thanks.